My name is Keisha Head. I am 41 years old. Today's date is May 13th, 2001. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. The name of my recording partner is Diamond Blunt. The relationship is she's my daughter.
My name is Diamond Blunt. I'm 25. Today's date is Thursday, May 13th, 2021. My location is Atlanta, Georgia. The name of my recording partner is Keisha Hood. Relationship to my recording partner is my mom.
This is a wonderful opportunity. I have thought about this for weeks, and it is one of the conversations that we were intending to have way before this opportunity came available. And I just want to start by saying to you, as your mother, I just want to tell you things about me that I have never probably expressed. So, as you know, my mom, she was a schizophrenic mother, which means she had mental illness. And I grew up motherless. And that factored in to all of my being. So everything I've learned about mothering, everything that I've learned about life were based on my experiences that I had throughout my life. So with that being said, what kind of impact have I made on your life?
Well, I would say growing up, it was hard. But now that we've been around each other and learned more things about each other, it's been a great impact to see how a person can change and evolve in spite of different circumstances that life has thrown their way. So I would say it's been a positive impact because it showed me how to, you know, when you're down, the only way you can go is up.
That's amazing because even going through that, you've always been my strength. When I wanted to give up, when I wanted to just call it quits, I would always think, wow, Diamond, I have to get my life right for Diamond, or I have to, even though obstacles happen, got in my way and circumstances just by being in life without the proper structures and the proper supports. Even though I went through all that, you have always been like the light. That's why I named you Diamond. I didn't even understand the impact of how that would be, just calling you Diamond, Diamond, Diamond. I mean, every time I look at you, light, light, light. So that has been so inspiring. And to see you knock out obstacles in a way I never would have been able to do it and still push forward and still overcome has been, especially as an adult woman, like you're 25. When I was 25, I was like in the spiral of my rock bottom, like going down, but watching you live your life in reverse. Mm-hmm. You're in the spiral of reaching mountaintops. Mm-hmm. So it's just amazing how through your faith and through just resiliency and tenacity, you have overcome so many things, and you inspire me. Like, you might look at me and say, oh, my mom, but I'm looking at you and I'm like, wow, Diamond, like the inspiration that comes from that. What, if you can change anything about our relationship, what would you change?
I would change the absence. Like, I would say, because growing up, like I said, growing up, it was hard because I come from, like, being in my grandma's house, I come from a big family. And by me being the oldest, it was a lot of responsibility and, you know, a lot of hardships that I had to face alone. you know, even though I had my family around, I felt like they always would try to give me extra shelter, extra support because of certain things, you know, my mom and dad, you know, and it kind of, I don't know, it made me feel some type of way. But
when you say some type of way, you elaborate.
It kind of made me feel, I guess, you know how you can be lonely with a whole bunch of people around because people don't really understand, like, they give you things or say things, but it's really not what you need at the moment.
It's an emotional distance.
It's not really an emotional distance. It's just, like, avoidance. Like, when certain things that I was sitting down and talk about with my mom, I couldn't have it
with me.
Yeah, with you. Like certain moments and things I felt like I should have experienced with you, I didn't. Like my first cycle, or, you know, how to, you know, do my hair and certain stuff like that. Like I was walking around looking like a little boy for so long, but you know, you can see the absence, like just like a boy with his father, you know, it makes an impact. You know, and I wish some of those moments I could share, like my first kiss or, you know, things that I had that I couldn't really talk to my family about, because at that time they were just real, real religious and you've been not coming out talking about you like you're nobody and other things like that. So it's just certain mother-daughter moments, like the mother-daughter brunches and stuff like that, and to see my friends, you know, be with their parents and stuff, and I'm just looking around, and, you know, it just, I didn't have those moments. Now, when I used to step, I could look up. My mom was in there. She was in there with some shades on, but, you know, it stopped.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing how, what I've learned at 41 is that your life coexists with other people's lives. And I didn't really understand that at 20 or 17 or 19 or 21. So I went to prison at 26. Mm-hmm. And that was 3 years at, like, those were the critical, because you were 10. Mm-hmm. And those were the most critical years, because at 10, it's just like your sister, Maureen, mm-hmm. she's 10. Like, that's when you're learning those things. Mm-hmm. So, and then by me being in prison, can't come. It wasn't a point where it was like, so I was, while you were going through that, I was grieving every night, crying myself. It's like, wow. And what it made me realize is you never understand a good thing until it's gone, until it's taken. And I had to grieve that along with you. And that's when I realized, like, wow, this is a generational cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my 10-year-old self, as you know, I was being sexually abused. I was angry. I was missing my mom at 10. So it's like the same thing happened in the next generation. So that was my thing. When I got out of prison, I was like, I gotta break this generational cycle. And then you got poverty, and then you have other factors of stability, employment that I couldn't get because of my criminal back, like all these other things play. But even understanding, like, that had an effect on you, and it created abandonment, just like it had on me, and not really understand, wow, when you sit in other people, you don't realize, like, the impact that you make. I would say that I came in on the picture of my mom's journey, and it's just like throwing a rock into the water. You know how it creates those ripple effects?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I look out at all of it, it's like, what was the trauma that caused that impact to create those generational effects on us? So it's as I get older, I began to realize, like, wow, what was my mom's story? Or what was her mother's story? Or what was, so, like, the generational thing, but what I am seeing as it gets that it gets better. Like, I'm sure my story pans so far less than my ancestor's story. And your story will be greater than, you know, mine. So as we journey, and how, the question I have is, how do you mend that?
How do I mend?
Yeah, mend that that pain, because that may have, I know that caused, I'm not going to even say that may have caused pain. I know that caused pain because I felt that pain before.
I needed my pain, like, well, I always felt like I always had a different type of understanding from other people, especially when I was younger. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't, I'm not going to say I disregarded it, but I didn't take any of it personal. I took it as like, okay, well, what are you going to do different? Like, are you going to allow your anger or your bitterness or resentment or your feelings to cause you to go into the same cycles? Or are you going to, you know, get yourself up and do things different to get different results? So the biggest part of me that I forgave, especially understanding that everybody go through something, everybody has stories, and I can't hold a person because of some decisions that they made in the past, because they've probably been the best decision that you had to make at that time, you know, and not hold, because a long time I had resentment because I felt like, because the first couple of years you was in prison, I didn't even know you was in prison. Somebody told me you was in Florida. And so when you caught, like,
that's 2 years of pain.
And I'm like, dang, my mom left me, you know, went to Florida. She could have came and got me. So I stopped wondering. I stopped hoping for the phone calls. I stopped wondering where you were. And then one day I got a phone call and you told me. And I was like, you went to Florida this long? You was like, no, I'm in prison. And I was like, you've been in prison the whole time.
And I told everybody.
Yeah, but I guess that was their way of protecting me, because they probably felt like I was too young. But I always been old. Mm-hmm. So it's like I would have understood that better, because I used to be worried like, oh, something happened to my mom, or, you know, just those little thoughts, that negative thoughts that try to get in your head. And then I started praying too. And I was just like, you know, to help me cope with some of the pain, because it was making me bitter, and it was making me hard to trust people, to talk to people, to build relationships with that. And I started acting out in school and stuff. And I never forget, it was this Monday, I was just acting up. I don't know what was wrong with me. And this police officer, he came and he jacked me up, and he was like, he knew you and my daddy too. And he said, what's wrong with you? And he jacked me up like I was some dude on the street. And he said, you gonna end up just like your mama or just like your daddy out here if you don't get yourself together. He said, you're a beautiful young lady. You get good grades. You just out here acting a fool because, you know, I don't know why he's acting a fool. And then I had, like, that was the first time, you know, somebody was actually listening. He was like, what's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And when he asked me what was wrong with me, I let him have it. And that's when he started introducing me to all of these different programs that can help me with college and, you know, certain things like that. And then my perspective on life changed, because I wasn't thinking about going to no college or anything like that. But once I realized, like, you know, I had to be the one to break these curses. And my mentor, Mrs. Washington, she came to me because I was into music. And one day I was just in the chorus room, just in the dark room, skipping class because I didn't want to go to class because the kids was picking on me and stuff like that. And so she came in there and she said, one day, you'll understand why you have to go through everything that you go through. And she said, she said the road gets clearer the longer you travel. And she said, but the only thing about the road you traveling is less travel. And I said, what do you mean? She said, you see how you alone in this room? She said, that's how it is on that road sometimes. And she said, but the thing about it is that you're not easily distracted and you got a clear vision of where you're going. She said, but if you continue to be angry and bitter, she said, you will always be stuck in the same place. And she's been in my life ever since, like still encouraging me, you know, to keep traveling on that road.
And it is a road.
It's a long journey. But, you know, what I realized about that road is that you learn so much about yourself and how much you can bear and how, you know, how much you can, what's the word? How much your life reflects on other people. Because I look at other people who made different decisions, who laughed at me, picked at me for, you know, making some of the decisions that I made. And you could tell the difference because my life, I wasn't, and I'm still talking about how I meant it. I had to put a purpose into where I was going because I was at that point when I was 13 years old, I was just going. And when, you know, my train of thought.
I'll catch you.
And when I was going, you know, I realized I was just going without a purpose or a plan. So I put a purpose in the plan there. So now you make it easier to travel.
Yeah. For me, what mended, I didn't want to mend because I kept getting banged up. So for me, trafficking changed my life. Like it's from 16 to 26. Like the first time I was introduced to my pimp or trafficker, the whole trajectory of my life, it changed. And I think the only thing that separates us as individuals, how many people in the world? 8 billion? Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere around that figure. But there are 8 billion people in the world. We all having different experiences. We all having different thought processes and opinions and ideas. And what I've learned is the only thing that just separates us is our experiences. And we only allowed to view life through our own lenses. So if you weren't there, I can tell you how it was, but it's something different than actually being there in the moment and having the experience that differs. Like there are some places you've been that I've never experienced, I've never traveled. So when you tell me about it, I can have empathy, but I really can't really understand how it affected the inner workings of you. So I'm saying that mending is a journey. Like as you was going through yours, like prison saved my life. It literally gave me like I didn't have to worry about where I was gonna lay my head or how I was gonna support my, cause that was my biggest, from 12 years old up until 26, that was my greatest worry every day. What I'm gonna eat, where I'm gonna sleep, where I'm gonna go. And when you become from 12 to 26, though, that's how many years is that? 14 year journey? Like that's a 14 year mode that I was in, survival mode. And that's why understanding survival mode and coming out of survival mode, like you have literally helped me in that way of why I'm safe now. I can land now. I can start to build because even now, the things that happened to me as a child, it affects the woman that I am and having to go back and heal that inner child and having to also mend the things that I broke on the outside, far as my children, people around me, because you don't realize the effects. Like I used to complain and blame everybody for everything. but not remember the attitude I had. There was a reason why they stopped answering them, because they didn't do anything. I would cuss them out right then and there, and then wonder why they didn't answer the phone the next time. So I began to see, like, even though these bad things happen to me, it doesn't give me an excuse to be a horrible person.
Yeah.
It doesn't give me excuse, like, I've told you mean things, like, I wish you was never born, things like in my anger, like even blaming you. So I had to learn accountability. I had to learn how not to say things that are hurtful, like, it, because that's what I heard all my life. And when you hear things all your life, you're stupid, you're never going to be anything, you're going to be just like your mama. Those things, the things the teacher told you, those were things that my aunt told me. Like, so, and as a child, you began to believe those things.
Yeah, and I think that's where the difference was, because they would tell me stuff like that, and I'd be like, watch. No, I'm not. Like, I always been a challenger. Like, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm gonna show you I can do it.
It got me
in trouble too. But, like, I remember I was in the eighth grade, and it was that year that I was going through all that medical sickness stuff, and, you know, and in and out of school. And my teacher, she was
so,
like,
glad to be there in that moment.
Yeah. My teacher, she was like, you know, I don't even know why you come to class. She was like, you ain't going. She was like, you might as well sign up for summer school, because you're not going to pass none of these tests and all this stuff. And so I was like, this lady must not know who I am. And I could have, you know, students and stuff was right there, and I could have allowed that to embarrass me. I could have cried. I wanted to cry, actually, but I didn't, because I know what's in me. And I was like, I have.
Where did you get that knowing from? Like, that strong?
To be honest, I don't know. It's like I always know.
You have always knew things.
I don't know. I think it's probably just a God-given gift. Like, I know when I got something, I literally know when I don't. So it set me up, like, not to fall and crash. Like, and I went in there and I took them tests and I exceeded over everything, you know, and I always believed in faith. I always had crazy faith. I always felt like, and I think G-Mom taught me that, like, always believing in the things that you pray for, like even praying for your family and stuff like that. Because I used to pray for you and pray for my family, because I was like...
Who taught you? G-Mama taught you that? Let's pause right there, because it's very important that we introduce who G-Mama is. So even though I was born motherless, and I don't say motherless in a way that I didn't have a mom. My mom, just like, I wasn't there for you presently. My mom was the same way, but it's amazing how people, I call them villagers. Villagers step into those gaps and nurture those things in you that need to be nurtured.
Yeah.
And it's not always your mother. It could be, for us, it was, well, for me and you, it was G-Mama, which is my godmother, who passed away in December of 2020. So she's going to be missed. But what, I know what I've learned from her. I've learned from G-Ma, I've learned how to hold my head up despite I've learned how to not make excuses, because those are the things that she ultimately taught me. Because I used to always compare my life to her and not give her the benefit of the doubt because she didn't share the same experiences. But she would shut me down anytime. She's like, oh, people done been through way more than what you done been through and still making it. So she's always been my motivator to not give in or give up. So it's funny that you mentioned her. Not funny, but it's not even surprising. But it's an honor to mention her and honor the seeds that she's planted. So when I came from prison, how has it been watching me going through transition, and what has that looked like?
If, you know, in the beginning, going on the story map, it's a little rocky, but it's really like...
Why was it rocking?
Because I felt like you had to adapt. Like, you, what year was that?
That was 2009. And let me just give you
came home 2009.
So like, March 9th of 2009. Yeah. Some weeks before here.
Yeah, so it's, I feel like from, wait, so there's 06 you were.
I came home homeless.
Yeah, and you had to adapt. So it's like you was trying to, you were still in survival mode. And so I felt like some of the decisions that you made, and I felt like it was selfish that I didn't understand
what,
like, I don't know. I felt like
getting married.
No, nah, mom. You had like two boyfriends before you got there.
Well, that was because I didn't have.
But that's what I'm saying. It was a
surprise. But I've been in that cycle since the beginning, getting in relationship, toxic relationships.
That's what I'm saying. You were still in survival mode, so it was like you was trying to figure out your place or whatever. But of course, I was 13. I was 13, so I didn't understand it. All I knew is
that's
that
amazing, because I got out of prison and I married Derek in 09. So it was 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
So those first 9 months was so, really working.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, I'm just like, dang. And look at it from my point of view. I'm like, dang, Shawty done had two boyfriends.
Yeah, because
they get married.
Yeah,
in 2 weeks.
Because at that point, but I knew what I wanted. I knew what I wanted, and I didn't want to stay in relationships. Like, I got out of real, and I've always been like that. Abusive men that I see have tendencies to be abusive. I get out. But you, no. When you move in with somebody, you can't just leave. Like, it's so much that goes
no,
into
I
that.
I know that. I'm saying, you said, how did it affect me? So I was saying, to see that at that age, yeah. I didn't understand, because my thing is like, okay, my mom home, I'm finna be spending a lot more time with my mom, her getting to know, but it wasn't that, it was different. But I didn't understand what was going on. Then when I started coming around, it was just not comfortable, because it was just like, okay, I don't really know these people like that, mm-hmm. You know, and I wasn't never stable, so I was always bouncing around from house to house to house. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to just chill. I'm going to just back up a little bit, because it's too much going on. Then you popped up at my auntie's house. It's like, I was married now. And I'm just like,
hello.
I was just like,
I met Derek at your auntie's house.
Well, no, I'm saying, but you met him, but it was just like, it was real fast. It was quick.
Yeah, I got married 2 weeks into knowing my husband. We've been married 11 years now. But I knew I wanted to be married.
I know, but I'm just saying for my...
But you have to understand, I'm a trafficking survivor. It is very hard. Let me tell you how my relationships went. When somebody saw the tattoo on my back, they would treat me way different. That's what happened. Your mom at Tan's Cookout, Toots Cookout, somebody told Twan, and you know who told him, I'm not going to name a name on the court, but told Twan that I was with a pimp. And he came, so that changed, that was the end of that relationship. And that happened so many times in relation to the point where I stopped being in relationship with men because of the judgmental space. You don't know the impact it is for somebody to know your history,
mm-hmm.
and for somebody to judge you by your history, and you can't even have it. That's why I didn't even tell Derek until we were married.
Oh, trust me, I know how it is somebody to judge you by your history, from going to a club or to being a pastor with them.
Yeah, but so you can take that experience. So that's an experience to understand.
Yeah, I understand it, but I'm saying like at that time, being a 13-year-old,
that's why I say when you don't have the experiences, it gives you a different view.
My thing, like, it had already been in my head, like, when my mama coming home, we doing this, we doing that, we gonna do this, because I used to, like, I can't wait till my mama come home. Mm-hmm. But it was different from what my mind had already played out or fantasized it.
Because your mind didn't calculate poverty.
Because you got to think about, I never knew you were trafficked and all that stuff until I was 13.
Yeah.
So you.
Let's talk about that.
Looking at my perspective, I never knew you went through all of these things. All I know is my mom was always in and out of jail, or, you know, it's always something different. So I didn't know because we didn't never have that conversation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we did have that conversation.
When we did finally have a conversation
at 13,
it made me look at you. It made me have a different respect for you because I never knew that, especially when I went to one your first speaking engagements and to actually hear your story, you know, full out. I'm like, dang, like my mama really went through a lot. I thought I was out here going through a lot, but I never knew your truth, especially when I was going through. When I had got sexually assaulted or just being promiscuous, and it put me in a situation where, you know, I feel like you had to tell me your story. So
that's the reason why I got married, because I knew you were watching me, as a, you know, being relationships. Mm-hmm. But that was me in survival mode, thinking relationships equal stability.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to learn different. And marrying Derek and my husband, mm-hmm. I've learned that stability, like I've never liked to be with multiple men. Mm-hmm. I've never, even in traffic, like the things that happen to you are not what makes you you. Like you have to decipher, mm-hmm. like what belongs to me and what was given to me. And mm-hmm. I think learning that helped. And then as I began to heal from that, I was able to open up and help mend some things with you or be available.
Because I can say, like, a lot of my seeing certain things growing up, it helped in my independence. Because I'm like, okay, well, I see this. I'm going to have to depend on myself in certain things. I sometimes think I'm a little too independent because it's hard for me to rely on other people. So that's things that I'm working on.
Especially
about to get married and stuff. I'm gonna have to let my fiance be a man sometimes, all the time.
Yeah, well, it has been a great, as we continue to heal,
mm-hmm.
and we continue to learn each other and learn the impacts of our experiences.
I gotta ask you a question.
Okay,
what is one of your biggest fears, and what is your greatest success for now?
Okay. One of my biggest fears is dying.
What?
Yes, and dying and just leaving my kids out here. Like, what if I have something to tell them? Or what if I think that's my biggest fear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to cry. But I think my greatest success is mothering.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of my children are amazing humans, and just having the ability to be there and have an impact now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go back and change the past, but I can create memories. Like, if you think about it, all your good memories outweigh any bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, and just creating good memories with my kids are my greatest successes.
Mm-hmm.
They're my promise from God. And all of y'all are just amazing. I watch y'all grow and just become and evolve. Mothering would be my greatest success.
Yeah, and I think you do a really good job at that. I'm 25 and I'm still a baby. That's funny. I didn't know you were scared of dying. Is it scared of dying or scared of dying before fulfilling your purpose?
It's scared of, I just want to be in communication. Like,
I'm trying to talk.
I might be the little bird on the window. I kind
of,
that's me. Yeah. I just want to be, just
that
let you know.
Be
that.
My fear, but just to not serve my purpose. Like, I don't want to leave the world and be sad and not experience.
I definitely serve a purpose.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about it. It's just not being available in the way that we're available, that I'm available to you now. I can touch you, or you hear my voice, or mm-hmm.
So just that, because I've been with you all your life.
Right.
So it's just like, wow.
Because we have to think about stuff like, dang, one day we gonna really see each other. But it's like, it's so important to do what we have to do now. It's more borrowed time.
To have these conversations.
Yeah, these conversations good.
Yeah. Mm. Well, thank you.
Thank you, girl.
All right, we'll end now.